No de crisis, y menos de recesión, de desaceleración.
La prima de riesgo española se disparó hoy en la apertura de mercado hasta los 470 puntos.
Se va a proceder a una revisión del modelo de prestaciones por desempleo, garantizando que estas no generen efectos desincentivadores en la búsqueda de empleo.
Pero, igual que estás percibiendo la energía de la próxima llamada.
No, Vicky, aquí había cosas muy claras y es una pena, porque no soy yo, sino es ella, que no ha querido con él.
¡Desaparecido! ¡Gol del muerto! Había que dilapidarlo, laminarlo, machacarlo, hundirlo y quitarlo.
Yo no sé los demás qué dirán, pero a mí me gustan grandes.
5 centímetros me ha crecido.
Así es, y el grosor, perfecto.
Si se suman dos manzanas, pues dan dos manzanas. Y si se suman una manzana y una pera, nunca pueden dar dos manzanas.
If you're looking for trouble, you came to the right place.
Always treat me right.
Bienvenido a Espíritu de Rock and Roll. Te saludan Eduardo Molina, al control de sonido, y un servidor, Daniel Acirón, delante del micrófono. Let's go surfing now, everybody's learning how, come on a safari with me.
Surfing with me for a long surf, baby. Sit and see.
now. Everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
David Lee Marks vivía en Hawthorne, California, en la misma calle que Brian, Dennis y Carl Wilson. De esto hace más de 50 años y han tenido que pasar décadas para que podamos tenerlo en España, lo podamos escuchar en vivo y podamos charlar con él. Buenos días, David. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Lo primero que vamos a hacer es repasar esos primeros cuatro discos en los que David Lee Marks fue un Beach Boy. Se pudo escuchar su guitarra en Surfing Safari, en Surfing USA, en Surfer Girl y en Little Deuce Cop. Cuatro discos que marcaron el ascenso de esta banda de jóvenes talentos que ficharon con una demo del Surfing Safari que escuchábamos por el sello de Capitol Records. David, ¿qué recuerdos conservas de ese inicio, de esa firma con Capitol Records?
What do you remember about your signing your contract with Capitol Records, presenting the first demo from Surfing Safari and the first recordings?
I was 13 years old when we signed with Capitol Records, the only label in Hollywood that would actually have anything to do with us. Murray Wilson, Brian's father, tried to get us record deals with every company in town, and they all turned us down, except for Capitol. I don't know what he did. He might have walked in there with a gun. I don't know. But an offer they can't refuse. But it was a good thing because Surf and Safari became top five in the country, selling hit in America, and launched our careers at a very young age.
How important was for you having this age, be so young, to develop in a little star, in a young teenager with a lot of talent and in the hit parade?
That was a pretty common thing back then. There were many child artists in the recording business, like Stevie Wonder. I forget his name now, but the song Why Do Fools Fall in Love?
Frankie Lyman
was very, very young. I think he was 14 when they recorded that song. Also, some country singers like Brenda Lee, she was 13 when she had her first big hit song. So that was a pretty common thing, except that it wasn't very good for our education. We had to leave school, and we had to pretend like we were learning on the road with the tutors that we ignored. But so I had to go back later on and get my high school degree when I was an adult.
Comenta David que ese éxito al llegar siendo ellos tan jóvenes, tenía 13 años simplemente David Lee Marks cuando junto al resto de los Beach Boys firma por Capitol Records y empiezan a grabar esas canciones que a día de hoy siguen siendo grandes éxitos. Es un problema seguir en el instituto y compaginar el éxito musical con la dinámica educativa del momento, pero nos recuerda que por aquel entonces otros artistas como Frankie Lymon, Stevie Wonder, o incluso Brenda Lee habían triunfado a edades muy tempranas.
Do you talk about the father of the Wilsons? And I want to speak about your mother, Joan Marks. I think she was an important person for the first steps from the Beach Boys. Can you remember what was exactly her role in the Beach Boys group?
Well, my mother was into spiritualism. She studied metaphysics. And one of their popular phrases had to do with vibrations. Everything had to do with vibrations. So Brian Wilson became interested in that. And he would ask my mother many questions about that. So this is where Brian got the idea for Good Vibrations. Also, I think my mother's biggest influence on the Beach Boys was getting me out of the band, which didn't really turn out that well for me. But they had to argue about money because they were adults, and we were just children trying to have a good time. Except for Brian and Mike, they were adults. But Dennis and Carl and I were just kids having fun, and we had no idea that the Beach Boys was big business. When we started having hit after hit song, the money rolled in fast, and people change. Murray Wilson and my mother started to argue about things. She wanted to have more say in the managerial department, and Murray was stealing all the money. So there was a big conflict, and I think that's when the Marksman was born. Mm-hmm. I started my own band while I was still in the Beach Boys. After I was, you know, in the process of leaving the band, I had to stay for another several months to almost a year, fulfilling our contractual agreements. So I had to keep playing with them after I quit. In the meanwhile, I had the Marksman, and we were recording songs. And that was a good thing, because the Aphonics picked that up somehow. And
charlamos sobre el papel de Joan Marx, madre de David Lee Marx, nuestro invitado de hoy, porque ella, como bien estaba recordando su hijo, cumplió un papel fundamental en la historia de los primeros Beach Boys. Fue ella la que gestionó, junto con el padre de los Wilson y la madre, algunas de las tareas más conflictivas que acabaron generando una distancia que tenía que ver, por supuesto, con las cuentas y con el dinero, que propició que nuestro invitado acabase fundando los Marmens. Una de las cosas también a tener en cuenta y que él estaba repasando es que ese concepto famoso cantado por Brian Wilson de las Good Vibrations fue algo que Joan le trasladó a él. Fue ella la que desde su filosofía de meditación le habló por primera vez de las buenas vibraciones. Estamos en los años 60 en California. Hay surf, como el que escuchábamos, hay buena vibra, pero también hay coches rápidos.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409. Well, I save my pennies and I save my dimes. Giddy up, 409. For I knew there would be a time. Giddy up, 409. When I would buy a brand new 409. 409, 409. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, 409. Nothing can touch my 409, 409. Ooh, giddy up, giddy up. 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 When I take her to the drag, she really shines. Always turns in the fastest time. Giddy up, 409. My four-speed dual quad positive traction 409. 409, 409. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, 409. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, 409. Giddy up, 409. Giddy up, giddy up, 409. Nothing can catch her, nothing can touch my 409.
Fue 409. Los Beach Boys, entusiasmados con las olas y con los bólidos veloces. How important was in the 60s having a fast car, a big car?
Yeah, well, it's still important to a lot of people in the country. But back then it was bigger than surfing. The West Coast kids liked us because of surfing. But the Midwest, in the middle of the country, it was all about the cars, and that's what really made us big. And I remember that noise, the car motor, woke me up in my sleep, coming down the street. They were out. Brian had borrowed my tape recorder, and he put it in the street to record Gary from Boston. I told my friend Greg that I was in the Beach Boys. So he called his cousin from Boston, who immediately drove out. And that was his car. It was an actual 409. And that was his car we recorded. So it was 10 in the evening, and the neighbors were calling the police. Because it was maybe 5 takes before we got in.
Nos cuenta David que es un 409, un 409, el coche que se escucha al principio de la canción y que se grabó desde su casa. Fue Brian Wilson el que utilizó una grabadora, pero tardaron hasta 5 tomas en conseguir el sonido que querían, lo que propició que acabasen los vecinos llamando a la policía. Estamos hablando de coches, estamos hablando de lo que sucedía en la California de la primera mitad de los 60 y tenemos que dar un salto hacia las grandes fiestas que auparon el surf como género. Es habitual escuchar historias sobre esos ballrooms en los que se reunían los pioneros del género, tanto en su vertiente instrumental como en los temas cantados. What do you remember about the first festivals in the ballrooms with the surfer people? There are a lot of reviews about these first locales and these first gigs.
We played pretty much the same places where Dick Dell was playing locally. Oh, and one more thing about the 409. Gary Usher, that was his car. He ended up writing songs. He co-wrote 409 with Brian, and he also co-wrote The Lonely Sea. It's on our first album, I think, or second album. So he wrote In My Room with Brian. He came up with those chords for the song In My Room. So that was Gary Usher. He's the one who drove out from Boston to record his motor on her. And so back to the other question, where we were playing locally was most of the clubs at the beach. We had many instrumental surf bands then, and we all played in the same place. Around town, all the different clubs and auditoriums, and mainly this is where Dick Dell would play, and then he would go on to the next one, and we would take his place in the clubs there. And that's the way it was at first, before we actually had to go on a tour for a month. We had to drive around. We flew to Chicago and rented a car and a trailer for our amps and guitars and drums. And then we had to drive all around the Midwest, all the different states, for a month. And that was our first tour. It escalated from there. The tours got more and longer, and instead of carrying our own amps, we had to start hiring people to carry our amps. And it just got, like, it turned into a big corporate business, in other words.
In this time, do you make surf in the beach or only playing?
It was in our contract with Capitol Records that we weren't allowed to ride motorcycles. We weren't allowed to drive fast cars. We weren't allowed to go surfing because they didn't want us to get killed or get our faces cut up. But we just said to hell with that and did what we wanted to anyway. So we did go to the beach a lot. It was mostly Dennis and me. We surfed. Dennis was a lot better at it, and he kept it up. I quit. And he also broke some drag racing records with his car, but it was under a different name. He changed his name so Capitol wouldn't find out. And he was a great race car driver, and he holds some records, speed records now. And I even forget the name he was using, but That was kind of funny that he had to change his name to race his cars.
En relación a la escena primigenia de la música surf californiana, nos recordaba David Marx que habitualmente compartían escenario con Dick Dale. Y ahora estábamos hablando sobre si en esa primera época, a la vez que estaban tocando música surf, también lo practicaban en la playa. Nos comenta que al firmar contrato con Capitol Records se incluían diferentes cláusulas en las que se les impedía practicar deportes de riesgo, como puede ser el surf o carreras de motos y coches. Nos explica que esta norma fue saltada habitualmente por ellos, acudían a la playa, hacían surf y además, en el caso de Dennis Wilson, él fue un piloto de carreras consagrado, eso sí, siempre con seudónimo. There's nothing more exciting than the sparkle of chrome, like on a picnic bench with a clear glass dome. And there's a place downtown where you can see them all, where you can browse all night and really have a ball. And the custom car show, it's a custom car show. Can't think of any other place that I would rather be than the custom car show. You see the surfing buddies and the new school goodies at the custom car show. Well, you get to the show and you walk through the door. The showboats and trophies all over the floor. The band that was playing up on the band, they are the coolest band in the land. They were playing at the custom car show. It's a custom car show. Can't think of any other place that I would rather be than the custom car show. You see the cars of the land plus a big ball band at the custom car show. You hear the guitar well, you still ain't leaving a trail. The drummer's really bumping, and then the kids are all stomping. Everybody here, yeah, they're ready to go. I'm sure I'm glad that I came to this rock and roll. It's a custom car show. Yeah, it's a custom car show. Can't think of any other place that I would rather be than the custom car show. Cars of the land for some big boss band at the custom car show. Y de los Beach Boys a The Marxmen. Después de grabar esos cuatro primeros LP con ellos, nuestro invitado montó con tan solo 15 años su primera banda, bautizada David Marx and The Marxmen. Una banda en la que él podía dar rienda suelta a las composiciones, algo que bajo la famosa tiranía de Brian Wilson no era fácil de hacer en los Beach Boys. Así aparecieron canciones como Custom Car Show. Nos gustaría saber, David, how difficult was understanding Brian to that you want to write songs also. It is impossible to write songs in the Beach Boys, and so do you need to have the Marxmen to be free to that? Or
yeah, Brian was 18 or 19 years old, and I was 14. So I was just a child that he sort of could not take seriously. So I would present him with a song, and it would just pass over his head like, oh, are you serious, kid? Get the hell out of here. Kicked, I think he even kicked me. And I don't know. But anyway, he had so much pouring out of him so fast. And when he did collaborate, it was with his cousin Mike or another adult like Gary Usher or Roger Christian. He wasn't about to sit down with a 13-year-old to write songs with. And let's face it, they weren't that great, the songs, you know. Custom Car Show could have been a Beach Boy song, I think. But it wasn't. So I recorded it with the Marksmen, who were Carl Wilson had a high school friend named Mark Grossclose, who played the drums. And Dennis injured his leg and couldn't play with us for a while. So Mark sat in for Dennis on drums with the Beach Boys. And he had a band called the Jaguars, like the Fender guitar. And I just went there and took over the band and said, okay, this is my band now. And, you know, if they didn't like it, I just kicked their butt. But I needed a vehicle to for my songwriting. Mm-hmm. They weren't very good musicians, except Mark. He was a pretty good drummer. As a result, the music wasn't really, it wasn't honed in very well. So we had some releases. We were the first act on A&M Records, actually. Mm-hmm. And so we had a local hit with that. And then we went on to Warner Brothers Records and had another kind of local hit that fizzled out, and that we had a lot of fun touring California, two full tours of California. And we were still kids and we had a lot of fun. So, but the band actually broke up after about a year. We only recorded 18 things. And none of them were, only like three releases on 45s. That's all we had, no album deal or anything.
Reconoce David Lee Marks que este Custom Car Show que estabas escuchando ahora perfectamente podía haber sido un tema de los Beach Boys, pero no lo fue. Fue un tema firmado por David Marks e interpretado junto a sus Marksmen. ¿Por qué? Porque nos lo explicaba ahora Brian Wilson, sacándole unos cuantos años a nuestro invitado, tenía otra visión en cuanto a lo musical. Mientras el resto estaban por la diversión, él tenía prisa por avanzar y por componer. Así, David Lee Marks acaba fundando los Marksmen, contando con Mark de los Jaguars a la batería, y acaban registrando tres 7 pulgadas que conforman la discografía y la vida breve de este grupo, que nunca llegó a grabar un álbum, pero sí registró auténticos temazos como este Sheriff of Nottingham. We'll be right back. Sheriff of Nottingham, un tema de los Marksmen, un instrumental favorito de esta casa de espíritu de rock and roll. Estamos repasando la evolución musical de David Lee Marks, y después de haber sido un Beach Boy, después de haber montado su propio grupo surf, esos Marksmen, llega el momento de abrazar la psicodelia. Estamos en 1968 y fichando por el sello Liberty, David Lee Marks presenta The Moon. What about the psychedelic phase on your music?
The 60s was full of LSD and marijuana for us. There was a band that played with us on the same bill with the Beach Boys. In the beginning, they were named the Crossfires. So a local DJ got a hold of these guys and changed their name to the Turtles. So they were signed to White Whale Records. And that's where I met Warren Zevon and Matthew Moore. They were also signed as writers with White Whale Records. And Matt Moore had a bunch of songs, and he wanted to start a band. And so he and I started the band called The Moon. We moved into a recording studio on Hollywood Boulevard. We stayed there for, I don't know, a month. We didn't know if it was dark or light outside or what time it was, and we just smoked and drank and took acid. And, you know, I was telling Juan Diego about that's a psychedelic experience that lasted me for a lifetime. But anyway, that was the birth of The Moon. We got, he was a big high-powered attorney, Mike Curb, and then he went into the music business in Nashville, and he was the attorney general for California also. He owned the studio that Matt and I lived in, and he permitted us to record two full albums that were brushed under the table. The record company went belly up, and there was no promotion or distribution for that Moon project. Until recently, several years ago, somebody in England, I think it's called Cherry Red Rivola Records, it was an offshoot of Rhino Records, and they reissued the Moon Records in one CD. They did the same thing with the Colors. It was another band I was in at the same time. They were on Dot Records, and they didn't really make it very big either. But it was good music.
Como ha pasado tristemente en muchas ocasiones en la historia de la música popular, el disco se grabó, resultado de un mes en un estudio de Hollywood Boulevard, bebiendo y fumando marihuana. Esas canciones de The Moon aparecieron registradas, pero se perdieron en el limbo por la falta de promoción. Tiempo después, ya editado en CD, el disco volvió a coger un poquito de impulso, y a día de hoy puedes rastrearlo y disfrutar de canciones como esta, Brother Loose Love Colony.
Love.
Escuchábamos a David Marx al frente de sus Moon, en esta ocasión grabando el bajo y cantando Brother Lose Love Colony, una prueba de que la ambición musical de David Marx iba un paso más allá de ser un simple guitarrista. Tanto es así que en 1969 decide abandonar Los Ángeles para viajar a Boston y estudiar música en una de las universidades más prestigiosas del mundo. Estamos hablando de Berkeley. Why did you decide to go to Berkeley to study?
When I hooked up with Warren Zevon through White Whale Records, he told me about all this classical music that he was involved in. He studied with one of Igor Stravinsky's guys, Robert Kraft, and Warren was a child prodigy in classical music. And he got me really interested in that. He had books laying around on music that I on all over his floor. And his friend, Glenn Crocker, was a brilliant pianist who was currently at Berkeley in Boston, who flew out to be in a band with me and Warren. And so that's how I found out about the Berkeley School of Music. Glenn Crocker was going to the Berkeley School of Music. So I had to fly back there and see what that was about. Mm-hmm. I spent maybe a month there or less. They wouldn't accept me. I had no high school diploma. I had, did not have 100 hours of formal musical lessons. So they kind of threw me out. Get out of here. You know, you're no talent, bum. So, but they said I could sit around and learn, but the people there weren't very inspiring. They wanted to be on the road with Buddy Rich, you know, the drummer. And instead, they were teachers, so they were kind of mad about that. I walked around the corner to the Boston Conservatory of Music, where the resident composer took me in as a student, a private student, and taught me a lot about music. He introduced me to his teacher, Margaret Shaloff. At the time, she was 70. She gave lessons to people like Miles Davis and, a list of jazz people. She was their piano teacher. 70-year-old woman, bright blue eyes. She could hit that grand piano as hard as any man. She was incredible and very inspiring. So that was my big inspiration in Boston, not the Berklee School of Music.
After that, you began to play in a lot of records. These musicians that was recording with you don't know that you was a Beach Boy. Why do you didn't want that the people know that you was playing with the Beach Boys?
That wasn't a conscious decision. It just wasn't important. When I was playing with Matthew Moore in the Moon, I met his brother Daniel Moore, who was a songwriter producer in town at the time. He wrote songs like My Maria, and he wrote the Three Dog Night song, Shambhala. He wrote some hits, Danny did. And so he heard me playing in the Moon and decided he wanted to hire me for some his sessions that he was producing for a lot of different folk artists. And he would call me in to play guitar for them. And the subject of the Beach Boys just never came up. Danny liked the way I play, so he hired me for sessions, and I became a session player for a while. Doing, hired guitar player for studio work. And no one ever knew that I was a Beach Boy. And that was kind of cool. I was able to make it on my own.
Después de la experiencia en Berkeley, David Marx se convierte en músico de sesión y participa en grabaciones de grandes temas de la época. Durante todo ese tiempo, él deja de ser un Beach Boy y apenas nadie sabe del pasado que ha tenido como músico firmando hits con los hermanos Wilson. Él reconoce, con la perspectiva que da los años, que fue algo positivo y que le permitió labrar una carrera en solitario y hacer de su instrumento un instrumento de trabajo. Hemos hablado de los Beach Boys, hemos hablado de los Marxmen, hemos hablado de esa experiencia en Berkeley, de cómo pasa a convertirse en un músico de sesión, por momentos anónimo. Pero como los grandes bólidos siempre acaban dando la vuelta a la pista, tuvo que aparecer un español que quería escucharlo, quería escuchar las canciones que tocaba hace 50 años.
There's nothing more exciting than the sparkle of chrome, like on a beatnik bandit with a clear glass dome. There's a place downtown where you can see them all. You can browse all night, really have a ball at the custom car show. Yeah, well, it's a custom car show. Can't think of any other place that I would rather be than the custom car show. You see, the surfing woodies and the disco goodies at the custom car show. Well, you get to the show and you walk through the door. The showboats and trophies all over the floor. The band that was playing up on the stand, they were the coolest band in the land. They were playing at the custom car show. Custom car show. Can't think of any other place that I would rather be than the custom car show. See the cars in the lane, plus a big bass band at the custom car show. You hear the guitar wail, he's really leaving a trail. And the drummer's really bumping, and the kids are all stomping.
En 2015 veíamos por primera vez en España a David Marx presentando canciones propias, presentando esos temas de hace 50 años que tanto público quería escuchar. Esto fue porque uno de los organizadores de este festival, junto a Diego RJ, Juan Diego Sanchís, andaba ya detrás de David Marx desde hace tiempo. Juan Diego Sanchís, que también está con nosotros, es, además de uno de los organizadores de este festival, uno de los miembros, exactamente, guitarrista de Deafonics. Buenos días, Juan Diego.
Hola, buenos días, Dani, ¿qué tal?
Cuéntanos, ¿en qué momento decidís llevaros a Valencia, ese surforama, a David Marx?
Bueno, pues fue en el 2012, creo que, si no recuerdo mal, cuando los Beach Boys hicieron la última gira mundial que pasó por España, o creo que después pasaron otra vez más, no estoy seguro. Pero en 2012 yo fui a Barcelona a ver el concierto de los Beach Boys, y en esta gira mundial David Marx ya estaba sumergido en el proyecto desde hacía bastantes años, de nuevo. Y, en fin, yo era bastante fan de David Marx and The Marxmen y, evidentemente, los primeros discos de los Beach Boys. Y, bueno, lo vimos allí en directo, en Barcelona. Vimos que le vi que tocaba, seguía tocando muy bien, mantenía muy buenas manos, mantenía buena voz, buena actitud, buena planta. Y, pues, siempre que andamos un poco a la caza de a ver qué artistas son los que podemos traer al festival y que sea chulo y que sea algo... Que no se ha visto demasiado o tal, pues pensamos que David Marx sería una buena cosa. Pensábamos, ya teníamos con el Safonics, ya teníamos un poco de bagaje, habiendo acompañado ya pues tanto a Eddie Bertrand como a Nocky Edwards como a John Blair, y ya un poco veíamos que se podía hacer y hacer el repertorio que proponíamos para el festival. Y bueno, pues eso, a través de John Blair, que estuvo el año anterior, en 2014, hablando con él, le pregunté si tenía el contacto y, bueno, me dijo que el tío, pues más o menos, andaba bien y que estaba bien de salud y que bueno, que había vuelto un poco a tocar y a coger un poco de ilusión. Y nada, nos pusimos en contacto con ellos y adelante.
David Marx se sube al escenario del Surforama en 2015. El Safonics hacen de banda soporte. The Del Prince se encargan de hacer coros en algunos de los temas que se interpretan ese día. Y unos meses después, el Safonics, junto con Fernando Pardo, os marcháis a California, dais unos conciertos allí y además grabáis unas canciones con David Marx que acaban de ser editadas bajo el nombre Back in the Garage, un LP del que estábamos escuchando ese Custom Car Show. ¿Cómo fue la experiencia de viajar allí, de sumar a Fernando Pardo y finalmente estar presentando este trabajo que es, como decía David hace un momento, fuera de micro, un regreso a esas canciones que él ya no tocaba en su casa?
Bueno, pues para nosotros, te puedes imaginar, para un grupo como nosotros, un grupo de Valencia, de los alrededores, de la periferia, pues haciendo una gira por Estados Unidos, pues evidentemente ha sido una experiencia vital, ha sido algo increíble lo que vivimos durante ese verano. Bueno, cierto es que quedamos bastante contentos con el resultado en el Surforama con David Marx y parece ser que él también quedó bastante contento con nosotros. Como mantuvimos un poco el contacto, seguimos manteniéndonos en contacto por mail y le comentamos, oye, pues estaremos este verano por allí en agosto haciendo unos conciertos y un pequeño tour por allí. Nada, simplemente lo comentábamos por si nos veíamos y a tomar algo y tal, y nos dijo, pues oye, estaría bien que grabásemos un disco, ¿qué os parece? Y tal, intentamos cuadrar las fechas porque claro, irte a tocar a Estados Unidos es muy caro, y tuvimos que, solo teníamos 2 días libres, y en esos 2 días libres, en 1 día y medio, nos metió en un estudio, en un auténtico garaje en Reseda, al norte de Los Ángeles. Y allí grabamos en 1 día y medio 18 temas. Nosotros con Afonics, uno de los guitarristas, Mocho, no podía venir por motivos personales. Y bueno, decidimos, Fernando, que siempre se nos apunta a cualquier proyecto que suene medio bien, le propusimos la historia, nos dijo que encantado. Y nada, nos hicimos unos ensayos y unos conciertos y nos fuimos para allá. Y él estuvo también con nosotros en la grabación y pues eso, una experiencia muy, muy chula.
El Safonics, Fernando Pardo y David Lee Marx grabando canciones que en su día habían registrado los Beach Boys y The Marxmen. Poison, canción que puedes encontrar en Back in the Garage, un artefacto autoeditado en el que Fernando Pardo, David Lee Marks y Elsa Phonics se dan la mano en honor a esas viejas canciones de los años 60. Ha sido un gusto poder charlar con David Marks y con Juan Diego Sanchís. Antes de marcharnos, hay dos cuestiones que no quería obviar, y es how important was for you, for your life, the Beach Boys royalties to be comfortable?
Royalties?
Yeah.
Yeah, they kept me alive all my life where I didn't have to work too much anyways, except when I squandered them and have to get little jobs here and there. But, you know, the music business kept me alive. I got back playing with the Beach Boys real steady, like back in the 90s. And I've been playing pretty steady with them ever since. Done several tours with Mike Love in the last couple years. Did a tour with Brian 3 years ago. And also right after that, one with Brian and Jeff Beck. We all went out together and toured. And so now I have a break, and we're doing some shows together with the Aphonics. And I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. To see Spain like that, you know,
driving. Hay que recordar que además de los conciertos y la aventura discográfica compartida con Elsa Phonics, David Marks sigue en activo. En 1997 volvió a unirse a los Beach Boys como miembro permanente, hizo esa gira 50 aniversario de la que hablaba Juan Diego, y desde entonces sigue compartiendo escenario con los hermanos Wilson en esa big band que llevan ahora como soporte cada vez que se suben a un escenario. Además, nos contaba que recientemente ha estado tocando y girando también con Brian Wilson, defendiendo ese proyecto en solitario, en el que recientemente publicó un nuevo trabajo, un disco bautizado No Peer Pressure, con una canción, Right Time, en la que se puede escuchar además la guitarra de David Marks. También nos comentaba que Jeff Beck ha sido compañero de carretera recientemente. Todo esto surgía a raíz de que los royalties de los Beach Boys, una de esas cosas golosas que cualquiera querría tener en su cuenta de banco, le permite, y lo reconoce, vivir con tranquilidad, aceptando pequeños trabajos, pero con una base de calma siempre maravillosa para dedicarse a la música. Entiendo que no es esa tranquilidad la que habita en el cuerpo de Juan Diego, ya que te tenemos aquí de cara al Surforama, ese festival siempre valiente. ¿Algún adelanto, alguna leyenda, alguien que tengáis ya en el punto de mira?
Pues sí, el cartel está hecho ya. Está hecho, pero no vamos a avanzar nada. Si quieres, en 2 meses venimos y otra vez y hacemos un avance, pero...
Lo dejamos apuntado. Dentro de unas semanas, en Espíritu de Rock and Roll, volveremos a tener aquí a Juan Diego y hablaremos de esas bandas que están en el Surforama. David, was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for having me here. It was a pleasure.
Muchas gracias, Juan Diego, por...
Muchas gracias, Dani, por apoyar todas estas historias y estas locuras del rock and roll y estas giras. Muchas gracias.
Siempre un placer poder recuperar los viejos sonidos que nos entusiasman y actualizarlos, llevarlos a ese público que sigue enloqueciendo con canciones como esta, este Surfian, parte 2. Nos marchamos. Un beso. Sí.